You ever wonder about the people in family photos or ever try to ask who these people really were? Every face is a narrow escape or a love story that almost didn't happen. Your family stories are hidden in plain view. You just haven't accessed it yet. There are versions of these rebels and dreamers before life told them who they needed to be. And I'm not talking about the shiny stories everyone knows. I'm talking about the soul-crushing experiences with heartbreaks and real loss. You gotta preserve these stories now. So contact thevietnamstorybank.com today. No polish, just raw, recorded, beautiful history that makes you sit up and hold your breath. We dig it all up, record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, unerased, untouchable, and unforgettable. Don't let silence have the last word. Go to vietnamstorybank.com today. Make sure your family's stories are recorded.
Giá trị nghĩa là gì? In Vietnamese, it can be translated to patriarchy or masculinity, right? Gia means family and trưởng means like strong. The head of the household, the provider, the man in charge. Hi, I'm Mia. I'm a both host of Viet Boss Babe. And I spend a lot of time thinking about Vietnamese women, our stories, our position in society, our strength. But lately, I keep coming back to the other side of the table, the men. Right? And that's why we have this special series with Kenneth.
You know, I feel very honored to be participating in this conversation because probably I'm one of those guys from a previous generation who violates a lot of these, you know, modern day ways of thinking about progressive, you know, I'll be the first to admit, you know, I don't, When I'm existing in the world, I don't think of myself as somebody who believes in that framework. But, you know, as I'm going through relationships, these things pop up and I'm guilty of the being part of the patriarchy. And I think that this is a very worthy topic and I really appreciate you engaging with me on this topic.
Amazing. Well, I'm glad to also be a guest host on the Vietnamese podcast for our special series. So for this series, we're going to be very honest about Vietnamese men, how Vietnamese women receive it. And we explore these kind of conversations in a couple of series, right? Two hosts, one questions that we keep asking back to is, giá trị nghĩa là gì in the modern time for Vietnamese? So I would kick us off right away in our episode one, where we explore Đàn ông phải thế, who taught Vietnamese men how to be men. So I know that from my Vietnamese men in my life, growing up, people keep telling them, con trai không được học, right? Did people tell you that growing up?
Yeah, and that was like just sort of the basic framework of being a man, right? Like you can't show your emotions. I mean, I'm glad that you started with that question because that question really is the soul of, I think, Asian, even American patriarchy. Patriarchy in general is all about boys don't cry. And I think that that's a very sharp start for you to bring up is that boys don't cry. That really talks about how we suppress our emotions. And I think that when I think about my military experience, I'm like, well, we shouldn't be crying. Like, why? The previous generations fought battles and wars and they didn't cry. They were tough men and they supported their wives and their family. Why do we need to change that now is the question. Why do men need to explore their emotions? I think that's a valid question.
Yeah. I mean, vulnerability is power these days, right? And it's uncharted territories for Vietnamese men and also for many Vietnamese women. I don't think we talk a lot about emotions because there's always a imbalanced power dynamic when you show too much emotions, right?
Yeah.
Perceived so. So we'll start with, let's go back. Like, what does it mean to being a Vietnamese man and who taught you that?
You know, I think the real, and this goes for a lot of culture, not just Vietnamese, but since we are in the Vietnamese framework, I think it goes back to providing, right? Yeah. You provide money, financial resources, power. You want to make sure that you protect your family. You want to be physically able to do all that. And I think that that expectation seeps through all of the emotional barriers that we carry as a society. And it started, I think, in Vietnam in, you know, hundreds of years ago. You know, and I think that's the expectation for a lot of men in a lot of cultures is be quiet, put your head down and grind and provide for your family.
Yeah. And, but it's interesting that it's almost mutually exclusive, like being emotional and showing your, like expressing your emotion, whether it's through love, through care, it's almost like you can't show that part of you. And being a provider and being a like a protector, right? Like it's almost like the connotations that these two worlds can't exist at once.
Yeah, it's a great point. And this is a really good one. I think it's really interesting that you say that it can't exist at the same time, and it really can't. So let's figure out a way to create like a line in the sand to address this, why it can't exist theoretically on the same page or the same space.
Yeah.
Because I think traditionally, if you bear your emotions and you tell your partner or your family how scared, how vulnerable, how weak you feel, it might rock the foundation a little bit. And nobody wants to feel that discomfort. Your wife doesn't want to feel it. Your kids don't want to. Your little brothers and your little sisters and your ecosystem, they don't want to feel that. Your workers, your employees don't want to feel. They're like, wait, you're the man. You should be in charge here. Why are you making us feel your vulnerability? Your authentic self should not be here right now. Toughen up. Yeah, we're looking at you to provide our food on the table. Why are you making us worried? Yeah. Right? Like why are you bringing your mental health into our world when you are supposed to be the provider? We as children of the father or the wife of the man, there's other roles and responsibilities, but definitely we don't want to hear how weak you are. I think that's the thing that perhaps we should talk about is that expectation that as a man, as a boy growing up, the minute somebody around us feel like scared, that we're scared, that's the problem.
So you're telling me now that this is almost like it came from the women or like from the, you know, from like, let's say, like there's a narrative that was told on you. Like, are you blaming us? Yeah, it's like, there's like, who told you that, right? It's like, I mean, I'm curious too, because it's so built into our culture that...
Other men told me that. My dad, you know, my uncles.
Your mom tell you that? Yeah.
The whole system is predicated on this idea of toughness. So I think when we're defining this right now, when we're talking about how vulnerable and how authentic and weak and all of these attributes of a man, that we should also talk about, like, why does it make... And I'm not blaming the women and children. I'm just saying that there's an expectation to be the foundation, the solid foundation that does not move. And, you know, I've been in relationships in the last few years where my partners, the women were like, wait, why are you telling me, you know, that you are lost, that you don't know what you're doing, that you're confused? Like, go figure that out. That's on you. That's your responsibility. That's not on me.
Yeah.
And so then I'm not blaming the women, but I'm like, whoa, clearly, this is my issue that I have to define and have to figure out. So I think we kind of have to like figure out what's acceptable, what's not acceptable in the modern times for how vulnerable. I think the thing is like not stressing your partner out, you know, as a man is something that's very important.
Yeah.
It's like, go figure it out. go make me not worry about the finance. And another thing, it's like those partners that I've had are like all strong women. They're like, wait, we make the money too. Like, this is the modern age. Like, why are you coming to me with, you know? So there's all that.
Yeah. Because now, like, historically, the script was you are the provider. Yeah. I take care of the emotional, right? 100% contributions. But that's how we contribute, is you provide, you take care of the career and the food on the table, and I'll take care of domestic management, maybe even like house, like family wealth management is usually to the women, right? Like the man came bringing the money, the woman takes it and like manage it, and we take care of like the family and so on. And now there's a bit of a shake in that dynamic, because the work distribution, like, I can bring in the money now.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And a lot of women, like Vietnamese women, we bring in even more money sometimes than the men. And that makes the value of the men get questions like, okay, so then what do I bring to the table?
It's shifting. Yeah. You know, I had a lunch with a Norwegian family yesterday, Vietnamese, that, my God, this is mind blowing to me. They brought up he's a doctor, and I met this like crew of doctors. They reached out and I hosted like virtually on, they brought me in to talk about Vietnamese, you know? So one of the doctors came to LA and asked to have lunch, and I had lunch, and he said to me, medical school in Norway is 99% women now.
Mm.
There was one class that did not have even one man as a medical student becoming a doctor. Think about the implications of that. Like, what is happening where maybe 50 years ago, it was like 100% men that were in medical schools. And I think Norway is one of those countries that are leading the sort of like the charge with progressive ways of looking at patriarchy and equality and all of that. If they're leading the way, imagine what's happening in the US and Vietnam and all these other countries 10, 20 years down the road.
Mm.
Men somehow are being left behind. And that's a fact. That's a fact that men are being left behind, because the equality, the movement for women to and I think that that's something that hasn't been calibrated with society, both in Vietnam and America.
So then what is left for, like, men? where are Vietnamese men now with this shift? I know, I think North American, like, there's a lot of North American, like that conversation is coming up, right? Male loneliness, male regression, like, this path. But what are Vietnamese men? Like, how are you guys dealing with this?
Mia, that is exactly why we're here today, because there's confusion. There's mass confusion. I think that's why, like in America, the manosphere is such a big thing now, you know, men are trying to figure out where they belong. And it's these trad wives, you know, like all of these topics, you know. And I just want to say that I think you and I got together to do this, these sub-series, because I would like to open this up to a live conversation. At one point, I'm just going to plug it here, that we talked about that in detail.
Oh, yeah.
We want to see if we can bring this to a live platform and stream live stream and accept callers and stuff. But I don't know. I that's what I'm here for. I'm confused about all of this too. I'm open and I'm very progressive, and I want to see, I just want to see people happy. And I think that with men, social media, porn, video games, the lack of sports, the lack of alcohol, like men aren't drinking as much. It sounds so funny that, you know, if you don't have alcohol as a lubricant, and if you have porn, then you completely cut off the drive for a man to approach women, both online and in person at a club. I mean, clubs are dying too. Mm. You know, it's like all these things, but so society is changing so rapidly that I think this conversation is super important. And I think that it's compounding with Vietnamese Americans or Vietnamese in the diaspora. You know, so you bring up all these really good topics that, we can really get through it.
So many things. So let's dive into what one, like, where do we even start?
We can go back to what you brought up earlier about, okay, so there's that expectation about communication, right? I think there's, I said something about having a line in the sand at the moment where I think men should be able to speak freely, but at the same time, not worry their partner. I think that's the key. Maybe.
And you think that when you express sadness or, hey, I'm struggling, hey, I need help, has it been like an instant feedback, or is this something like it's in your head about like how that would be perceived? You know, like, have you tried that before? And like, how does your partner, previous partner?
Oh my God.
Or like, is it something that like, because you've been so conditioned or taught like that, that you just never even consider as an option to express your struggles? Cause how I receive, or, you know, as like a daughter, as a sister, as, you know, a female friend in the Vietnamese world, like, it's often being communicated in like anger or like avoidance, right? It like, it comes out in like other vices instead of you just telling me like, can you just tell me that you're struggling and then we can have a conversation about it? Yeah.
Maybe I should bring my exes on this show so they can explain, like, you know, because I don't think that I can give the honest version of that, right? Like, in my head, I'm like trying to like, okay, let me reconstruct what dialogue I had with my exes. But I think it's not one person, it's several people that have said, no, get your fucking act together, get it together, and don't bother me with the details. Like, you need to figure this out. You're a grown man. Yeah. This is like literally what, so.
Don't bring it to me.
So now that gets cemented in my masculinity. It gets bruised, right? Mm. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. I mean, I'm sure this is, a lot of men know before they open up their mouth, that expectation is like, shut up, get to work, go find money, and do not come to me with this BS.
Like, your job is just to take care of me.
Exactly. But because the women that I've dated or have been with are all people who make a lot of money. So as an artist, there's no way that I can compete in the bracket, you know, in that income bracket. Mm. And so it's something I have to, oh my God, I can't believe I'm so open and honest about this right now, but it's a tough topic. It's a tough topic for me because, you know, as I was starting the podcast journey, the media journey, I had to let go of the business side, you know, I had factories both in LA and Vietnam, restaurants, literally operational, you know, and I was making good money during the years that I made a lot of money. And but I was so unhappy. And then once I decided to take this media route, I thought, you know, oh, my businesses will be able to kind of sustain themselves. But as the years gone on, you know, tapered down where I didn't make the money. And so I had to deal with multiple partners throughout those years, you know, romantic partners that was watching that kind of like that journey of dwindling finances. And I just couldn't go back to work in a traditional business way, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's expectations. And the partners I had were older too. They weren't coming from a younger generation. They were older. So that expectation, you know, it or not.
It's even more refined. Because they grew up with that. Yeah.
So you can't have it.
Yeah. You can't have it what?
Both ways. You can't. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think in my mind, it's more, it's like, if I can take care of myself like this and I'm educated, I make money, I can find, I can fund all my, you know, self-care ventures. Yeah. I don't really need a man to take me out to restaurants anymore or to even travel and stuff. Like, then the question is like, okay, then like your values in providing is not like, I don't need that. Right. But what I do need is like a partner who's emotionally intelligent and, you know, do life with, etc. But then that comes with like the expectations that your EQ needs to be at the same level as mine. And as we know, like it's just biologically, like women are, whose brain are usually more like mature on the EQ side, and just like more mature in general than like the their male counterpart at the same age. Right.
100%.
So it makes it also really hard for me to like, you know, have these expectations when biologically, you know, that like they might not, we're not even equal. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. And now you throw in the financial factor in too. That would throw things off too. So I really applaud young couples that are making it work today. It's a miracle that, you know, young people can deal with this dynamic. I think it's beautiful. I'm always the guy in my group that encourages, you know, people, whether they're homosexual or heterosexuals, to always get together, right? Like it's always me that pushes for the romantic, you know, people to get together, because I believe in it. I believe that when we get together as people, I think we learn a lot from each other, whether it's, you know, men dating men, women dating women, and opposites getting together. I think when there's love, you sacrifice and you learn a lot. And I think it's even a bigger privilege and honor to be in relationships today than it was 20, 30 years ago because of all of the complicated things that come up in relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. So then, how are Vietnamese men, I guess, catching up with this this changing in?
I don't think we are.
Relationship needs or identity needs. That's just like, we'll save the dating. I want to save the dating in like a whole episode. Like that's like a whole bucket. But just like in expectations and like, are there resources that you guys are reaching out to? Like, who do you talk to, you know, in when there's a change in expectations of you and, you know, the tools have not been built yet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great question. This is my advice. Find young men. As an old guy, you know, I'm 50. The guys that have really walked me through this is not the older guys. It's the younger guys, the 35-year-old, the 24-year-old guys that have really sat me down and said, hey, Anay, this is not the way it works, man. You have to see it from their point of view. You have to see it. You have to change and transform.
Yeah.
It has to come from the younger men. The younger men, and you know, I recently did a clip about this. We as children are brought into the world to really teach our parents how to become better people. The same thing is like the younger men are there as my friends to make, to allow me to become better, a better human being. And I think when we are able to open it up to have, you know, these old people, like 40, 50 year old, get older, you have to hang out with the 30 year old women and men. Like for me to hang out with you, Mia, is a challenge because I have to see and have to really tune into what you're saying, right? To become a better human being.
Yeah.
That's my advice.
The conversations are different. Yeah.
Yeah, totally different. The expectations are different. And if you could train with a young person, if you can train your emotional EQ side with a young person like a Mia from Viet Boss Babes or some of my guy friends who are like best friends of mine, they're 35-year-old chefs. They're 35-year-old filmmakers, you know? Those are the guys that teach me that you can't look at the dynamics that you're in the same way. This is a totally different world.
Yeah. Yeah. I also know that, like, with male friendship dynamic, like, to talk about emotion is very rare. So where do you even start, right?
Start with the young guys. That's my advice. And so,
like, don't go. What questions do you bring up to talk about these? Like, where would you start? Like, hey, I have this, like, you know, Gen Z guy friend. Where does the conversation start?
I would just be honest. I'm like, you know, like, hey, I don't make as much money as my woman partner. And
yeah,
I feel so insecure about that. Like, what's your thoughts on this, man? Like, it's a new world and I feel left behind. I mean, these are like honest conversations that I have with my friends, you know.
Yeah.
I'm an artist, you know, they're in 9-to-5 jobs that are secure, that have benefits, you know, and here I am out here, you know, struggling because I love what I do so much, you know, making, you know, podcasts and content.
Yeah.
How do I deal with this on an emotional level? And then, you know, if you can afford it, you got to go to therapy. You know, therapy really helps you walk through this stuff and really deal with the shadow work that you're having to deal with.
Yeah. So when you have, so I guess, you know, let's assume that, you know, like a 40-year-old or like, you know, a Vietnamese guy is like listening to our conversation right now, right? Mm-hmm. And like, he's looking for that like friend and he might not know where that conversation comes from. So for you or for your guy friends, if money is no longer the main values that, or financial security is not the main values that you bring to the table, then like, what values do you feel like you are contributing to?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
That's a great question. And I think things are changing so much that the values we bring is just really human connection. And you just got to be thankful that women are still into men, right? Right? You just have to be like, thankful and have gratitude that, oh my God, women still want to be into men. Yeah, still want me. And they don't care about the financial side. So we just got to be able to deal with being a complete and a whole person, that we have to be able to love ourselves first. Because when we love ourselves, women will see that. And I think it goes for women as well. Like, when women love themselves, men see that too. And that whole confidence thing is really the currency that we're dealing with today. I think the currency of loving yourself is such a huge thing. That's what I'm learning as I'm talking to different people in the realm of relationships, is how much love do you have for yourself? And it sounds so different 30 years ago as a Christian or a Catholic or a Buddhist, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the new world is really about, like, if you don't love yourself, then how could you love the people around you? Mm. How could you understand? And I think there's a lot of truth to that. The more I live in the modern world now, I find that if you don't like yourself, it's very difficult to like your partner.
Yeah. What are some of the examples of self-love? Because I feel like for someone who might be at the early stage of discovering or going through these questions, right? Like self-love, EQ, like all these buzzwords, right?
Yeah.
When I first started going through this journey, I don't know what that means, or like, what does that look like, right? Like, let's like, can we give an example of, you know, if a man is like, if you're like, okay, like, you know, Kevin, like, let's get like, how can a Kevin win, for example, start that journey of self-love? Like, where does it start? Does it start with journaling? Does it start with looking yourself in the mirror every day and be like, you got this? Or does it start with, let's go to the gym, because then you will feel more confident?
Okay, that's four things you just mentioned are all necessary. My God, Mia, you've done the work. You just literally mentioned the four things. And I don't know if you like rehearsed that, but those are the four things that you should be doing: meditation, journaling, hitting the gym, and looking in the mirror for affirmations. These are very, very like foundational things that young men should be doing and older guys should be doing as well. Because when you do, you literally listed the four things that I was going to say. The reason is this. If you've never done any of those things, if you don't go to the gym, you don't journal, you don't look in the mirror, you do affirmations. If you don't do these things, when you are around people, not just women, when you're around your guy friends, your girlfriends, your mom, you have to pay attention to what you're saying, because the words that come out, there's a detection system in other people that can hear the insecurity, the lack of love that you have for yourself. And that is a turnoff. And I think when you are getting that turnoff feedback loop in society daily, you start to withdraw and you start to like not have confidence. No matter how many degrees you got, no matter how much money you got in the bank, no matter what kind of car you think how valuable you think your car is worth, or you're buying table service, but what's coming out of your mouth is not loving yourself. Everywhere you go, it's a turnoff. How do I know that? Because I went through that. And I continue to go through that because it's programmed in my mind how little self-worth I have, right? So I have to like daily have to struggle with waking up at 4:30 in the morning, 5 o'clock, going to the gym as much as I can, doing the affirmations while I'm in the gym in between sets, looking in the mirror at the gym, telling myself the things that, and then journaling and really talking about these things to myself and saying, you know what? I'm worth more than I was programmed to be. And this is Vietnamese families that, you know, condition us to look at ourselves horribly.
That just sounds so hard because like on one hand you are trying to, I think these are really tactical things that people can take away from is like, where does the self-love journey begins? And then it sounds like there's still that other side, which is there's not a lot of safe space, it sounds like, for you to even be vulnerable. No. Like, because it sounds like there's like the trap, right? Like we're telling men, you go do better, you become more vulnerable. But then on the other hand, it's like, oh, but like not too vulnerable. I don't want that. I don't want to take care of you. Like you take care of yourself because you're inconvenient if I have to take care of you. Mm-hmm. So then it's like, it doesn't leave a lot of safe space for like for Vietnamese men to kind of like grow into, right?
I hate to say this, but you got to find that one or two guys. You have to find the one or two dudes, because I have like one or two guys. And I just recently figured that in the last 5 years that the one or two guys have to love you unconditionally. They have to love you like they love themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because once you find those two, three guys and you know that you can go to them and they will make you feel safe, always loved. They tell you they miss you. They tell you how much they love you. After every phone call, they're like, I love you, man. I mean, it's like in good times and bad times with these guys. I have guys that I talk to and it's always like, I love you, man. And there's no conditions. It's just unconditional love. You got to find those guys to have. So I think that's very important to find men that are younger, that have that like total love for you, even though they see your flaws, they understand your flaws, they know you're some old guy who doesn't get it. So they're just invested in like being a part of your life and they want to be around you. And I think that's like worth a lot of gold to have that, you know. Yeah. And I want to shout out to my guys that are, and you guys know who you are. I don't want to name people and then other guys feel shut out. I have those guys that are in my life. That do that and really point the truth out to me, you know, a handful of those guys. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, that you need that. You need that calibration with young men who can point that out.
Yeah.
That's the first step, I think.
Yeah. And how can women in your life help with this?
Oh, I can't speak for the women in my life. You know, I think I've broken a lot of trust with the, you know, I've learned that women in my life need to be seen by me. That's like the most, for me, my experience is like being guilty of not seeing women, them being invisible. You know, that's the hardest thing is like my mother, my daughter, my really close women friends saying, you know, you don't see us. And I think that that's a, even in relationships, I haven't been able to see my partners. So that's a big thing that I have to change. I think about, you know, hey, why don't you have enough women guests on your show? Why are there just all these guys, right? Like I've gotten that. So it's hard. Yeah, it's super hard. So I think that's, you know, from a patriarchal viewpoint, it's so ingrained how comfortable being around other men are and not seeing women, you know? So I think that's the first step is to remind us to see, to make women more visible in our mind. We step into a room, don't say hi to the men, go straight to the women and dap up the women, high five women, come in and say hello to the women first. And that's very uncomfortable for me. Yeah. Because, you know, this is just the way we were raised. Really? Oh my God, yes. So, because I was raised in, I think a lot of people can understand this from Vietnam too, is like, you don't want to be perceived as somebody who is trying to be around women and hitting on women, right?
Right.
You can't separate that, wait a minute, women can just be friends. Women are just human beings like other guys are. Like, why do you have to think that if you roll up to a group of wives in the group, that they're going to be feeling threatened that you're trying to pick them up? You've known them for 10, 15 years. Like, why does that why is that still an issue in my mind? Mm. Still to this day, when I roll up in my group of friends and I rub to the women first, it's so uncomfortable, but it's something that I have to do.
Do people feel like, do other people in the room feel that uncomfort, discomfort? Like, is like, that's just out of the norm. Cause I guess like for me, like with, you know, people in my, like the 20s, the 30s, like it's just, I guess we don't have that.
You don't.
It's interesting for you to hear that. Yeah. Like, it's just like, I feel like it's quite
normal,
a little bit more normal. Yeah.
And my young guy friends taught me that. They're like, dude, like, what is going on? And, you know, I've been called out for that. Like, you don't see the women in the group, you know, the five or six women, you never go over to the dinner table and dap them up. And I'm like, oh my God, do you guys know, like in the 90s, when we were growing up as men, the gang units that, you know, the gang affiliations, the gang adjacency that I grew up, was never a gang member. I just had friends who are gang members and I would be called over to their parties in the garages. The women would stand in one group and the guys would stand. And then you don't know who's dating who. You would never go over and say hello to the women ever. Throughout the entire party, you wouldn't do it. It's just, you don't do that. And the world worked that way. It was just like perfect that way. So that kind of conditioning follows Vietnamese American men. And I think in Vietnam too, you can see the separation and you just don't go over to women, a group of women. But I think when I started the podcast journey and I started to get a little bit more popular, and I think maybe that, that they're like, oh, you're too good for, no. It's always been there. It was never like, cause I got in the media game. It was always in there. I could never go over to a group of women and say hello. And I was never able to explain this to anybody. So the young guys were like, just like, yeah, you don't even see them. You need to go over. And it's this crazy, Mia. Some of my friends take the wives out. The young guys would take one or two of the women out for drinks. I was like, that is like mind blowing to me. You can't do that. Like, you can't just like, and then they're like, why? We're friends. We're friends. Yeah. Why can't you do that? This is a new day and age. I'm like, that's not how I grew up at all. So it's like, it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable for me now to even call just to check in and say, yo, how are you, to one of the wives or the girlfriends or the women in the group. It's just the most uncomfortable feeling. But I think that's part of the growth of breaking the patriarchy.
Yeah.
It's counterintuitive.
Yeah. And you still feel like weird about it sometimes.
Yeah, totally.
It's like feels abnormal.
Yeah, but that's where I think the growth happens. Mm-hmm. Like when I was hanging out in New York with you and Cookie, like I have to like remind myself, like, okay, they are human beings. Like I can go over there and talk to them. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Like, so many, like women, you know, like you work with so many of them, like and then some of your like colleagues or your teams, like, yeah, that's like, that's so interesting that it's, you have to go through a, like a mental prep. Be like, oh, like they're your friend.
I have to do that. It doesn't come natural. Yeah. And that's, I think, part of the residue of patriarchy. It's caked in there on so many different levels, not just like, oh, you know, there's expectations for men to make money, but there's also like these smaller details that keep us and prevent us from really connecting as a human being, right? And I have to like really remind myself that, okay, I got to go over talk to Mia and Cookie. I have to like be a part and be present with them and not think that, you know, because you guys are beautiful women. And like in my mind, it's just like, you don't want, it's a sickness, right? Like you don't want to like seem like, you don't want other, it's optics too, right? Like you don't want other people to think, oh, you know, he's just hanging out with young, beautiful women. No, these are people that I've had on the podcast. These are Mia is somebody I work with, right? Like these are colleagues of mine in the podcast world. And, you know, these are professional relationships, but even still, I have to like remind myself that I have to break these barriers and show other men of my generation that no, we can totally be friends with people and not be slime balls, you know, and portrayed that way. It's a weird thing.
That is a weird thing. Like the old questions of can women and men be friends, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they can, of course they can. Yeah, they can. Of course they can. They should be friends. But it's, you know, it's when it gets weird is when, you know, a guy would call the girl like one-on-one, hey, you know, let's hang out. That, of course, becomes weird. But like for a social setting, like what I'm describing in New York with hanging out with all the women of that weekend, that's when it gets to be like, I have to train myself and condition myself to like, be like, you know,
like, this is okay. You can do this.
This is okay. Yeah. This is okay. You're not a dirt bag, you know? It's the weirdest thing. Just be present with another human being, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's like, I've never really thought about that in that way. I think, I guess I grew up in like a different, you know, time. Or like becoming, you know, and like also are my peers, like grew up in a different time, but like, it's still, it's like a different problem. Like, it's like, we, like women and men can be friends, in the world that I grew up in, but then it's like, but then it's a different expectation. Like, it's a different problem of like, oh, like, why can't you just be better? Like, why can't you do this? Right. Why can't you anticipate my needs? Like, even just like friends, like, you know, like there's a level of like, I still think why can't just you like catch up and be where I'm at? Right. Mm. But of course, like it comes through like more, a bit more like gentle where like, okay, let's like coach you through this. Let's have you, like, you know, get guy friends to talk about what are you uncomfortable with and etc. But there's a little bit of like a drag. I'm like, I have to like, take you along with me when I'm just trying to be my own person.
Yeah. There's hand-holding. Yeah. There's some hand-holding there. A lot of hand-holding.
Yeah. Yeah. Hand-holding, the terms that we, the recent terms, it's mothering. There's a lot of mothering that happens. And like, it's like, it's exhausting, but then also like, if you don't do that, then they're going to be left behind. So where's the balance? Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a huge problem. And I think that, this whole idea now of men being able to be vulnerable and I don't even know, is that entirely a good thing? You know, I don't know. Cause that's, you know, I live in a I live in the past. I live in historically how patriarchy should function. And there was order in that. That's the thing.
Yeah.
People of my generation see order in the way the things that it used to be. And to be progressive, to be a little bit more liberal with our patterns takes a lot of work to be okay and to adapt to it. But then it's like, if I adapt too much, then the complaining, the being vulnerable, the being open, it's a turnoff to women too, right? And so where, like you asked that in the very beginning, where is the line?
Yeah.
It's, and I think it's going to be an ongoing conversation that we have.
Yeah. It's being drawn right now as
yes,
we grow up in this world. Yeah.
And yeah. I think we might have to bring on some guests as we move on, which is maybe bring in a therapist. You know, I've been wanting to talk to you about that. I have some ideas to have maybe like an in-house therapist on our show, so the three of us can.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. Two guys and a woman is sort of like the basis for a lot of successful radio shows and podcasts. Because it's, you know, and I think having a therapist or a doctor can really illuminate some of the questions that we have. You and I are coming from very inquisitive places that, like right now, it just shows that we don't know a whole lot, but we're asking questions. Yeah.
And
these guys.
Question.
Yeah. Yeah. These people are, you know, living these, you know, they're basically the trash can for society. You know, they're like,
I mean, they have a lot of data.
Yeah. You call it data. I call it trash. Well, I've talked to these psychologists and psychiatrists, and they're like, because I've been wanting all my life, one of the fantasies is to become a therapist, right? And they're like, Ken, are you sure you want to be the trash bin for like society? You know, stick to podcasting, you know, like we have to like hung rack, right? We have to take. Having these people we talk to for data would be very interesting. And I think there's textbook programs that they've studied. And I think our job for the next few episodes is to really open up these questions and maybe codify what we're asking. And one of the big questions that you're asking is like, how can we catch the men up? And I think that is a huge topic in America and in Vietnam soon. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like a nasty battlefield of men just like being left behind.
Oh yeah. That's a whole thing. Like Vietnam right now and male identity, like in Vietnam. I mean, I'm not talking about like North America, just like in Vietnam. It's a hot mess because it's like, we're living in such shifting worlds where the old values, the new values and more, and, you know, the Western values, Eastern, they're all kind of coming into Vietnam because Vietnam as a country is so open right now. Yeah. It's kind of like we're going through an identity crisis. Yeah. Like the family function is going through a family crisis. It's going through a crisis. So, yeah, well, that's it for our first episode.
Yeah, okay. Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, this is great. If you all have any questions or comments, please leave them in the questions, in the comment section. And we will love to, we'd love to identify more questions and kind of like go through more ideas as we were, you know, going through this sub-series.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. Thanks so much for tuning to Zatyung. We'll see you in our next episode.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trin. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.